Have you registered for the Recruitment Coach Live Summit yet? Here's reason number three why this will be the best investment you make in your business in 2025. You'll discover the latest trends. Listen, the recruitment industry is literally changing before our very eyes. What worked 2 years ago or even last year could already be outdated information. If you want to stay current in terms of the technology, the adoption of AI and automation, and the tactics and strategies that are actually working right now in today's marketplace, then you need to get yourself to London on September 17th or 18th. Do not get left behind. Register now at recruitmentcoach.com/summit. Welcome to the Resilient Recruiter Podcast. This is your host, Mark Whitby, and my guest today is Jordan Rayboy. Jordan began recruiting in the year 2000 and 6 years later struck out on his own, forming Rayboy Insider Search. What's special or unusual about Jordan's situation is that since 2006, he's run his search firm while traveling in a tour bus RV with his wife, Jessica. Jordan joined the Pinnacle Society in 2009. He's been on their board of directors, and he's done numerous presentations at NAPS conferences, state associations, and he's participated in training videos. He's really been an inspiration to countless recruiters looking to raise their game and make their dreams a reality. I first heard about Jordan about 10 years ago. I heard about this guy who was a really big biller running a search firm from his RV while traveling all over the US and Canada. And he had managed to build an effective virtual team, and he was leveraging technology in ways that at the time were really groundbreaking. And he was putting up big numbers while living his dream life. And I just love this idea of having the freedom and of not deferring your dreams until you retire, but somehow finding a way to combine your business and your personal goals and having the best of both worlds. And I thought to myself, someday I want to meet this guy. Well, today is the day. So Jordan, welcome. It's an honor to finally get to meet you.
Thanks, Mark. Happy to be here.
Fantastic. Now, Jordan, you refer to me by Jeremy Sizemore. How do you know Jeremy?
We met at an MRI Pace Setter in Cancun in 2003, and we would kind of get together and hang out at every Pace Setter after that until 2006 when, sure enough that year, we both ended up leaving the network and starting our own gig. And, now we see each other all the time. He's one of my best friends. And
Awesome.
He's just also one of the most knowledgeable recruiters I know. The guy is literally yes. like an encyclopedia of recruiting.
Yes, exactly. So I'll put a link to the interview in the show notes here at recruitmentcoach.com/podcast. Jeremy's episode was probably one of the most educational. Like, he was just dropping value bombs left, right, and center, and little scripts and little techniques the whole way. So it was really interesting. Now, Jordan, this interview almost didn't happen. Would you mind sharing why you were kind of having second thoughts about doing this?
Yeah, good point, Mark. I've done plenty of interviews like this. I love giving back to our industry. You know, a lot of people have helped me achieve what I've achieved, and so I love to kind of pay it forward. And I had some second thoughts on this one after initially agreeing to it, just because I've been struggling lately, and it's not I've been struggling in billing. Like, I'm pounding the phones and it's just not working. If anything, my market in IT sales and pre-sales engineers is actually doing fairly well. I've just been struggling on the mental health part, probably just reading way too much bad news, believing all the fear porn that I'm feeding into my mind, and just wondering what's the point of putting in effort to climb the mountain when it's all gonna come apart. And my focus this year has probably been more on raising chickens and growing vegetables and becoming self-sufficient to produce my own food, rather than becoming self-sufficient to produce my own major bank account, which I could just buy food. But not that producing your own food is bad. And we love having our chickens. And there are few joys in our life greater than walking down to the coop every morning and pulling out a dozen eggs and making breakfast that we literally produced ourselves. So there's great personal fulfillment in that. But, net is I haven't been on my A game from a recruiting standpoint for the majority of this year.
Well, Listen, you're definitely not the only one. First of all, I'm really sorry to hear that you've been struggling, Jordan. I appreciate and respect your candor and your courage for coming on here and being open about your mental health, because, you know, this is such an important topic. I think many, many people are also struggling right now, especially with the added stress and anxiety of the pandemic and the financial worry due to the economy. So when someone like you, who others look up to as a role model, comes forward and talks about their challenges, I think that really makes it easier for others to admit that they're not okay and to get help if they need it. So what was the trigger for that? Do you think it is, like, does it coincide with the kind of whole coronavirus thing and the, you know, all the drama surrounding that?
Well, like, I started the year off really well, and I was on for January and February, I was totally sober and loving it. You know, didn't drink anything, didn't put any kind of poison in my body. I was riding my bicycle 300 miles a week. I was, I was on a news cleanse. I wasn't reading news at all. And I went away to Costa Rica the last week of February. And when I was down there, I just started reading the news every single day about this, you know, virus that was getting worse and worse. And as soon as I got home back to Florida, where I was at the time, I have another house down there. We're like, I got to get the hell out of here. And we spent a week packing up our house and driving across the country back to Oregon, where our other house is. And we've been kind of here sequestered in Oregon. We got 60 acres, so it's kind of nice having elbow room and having a farm and a mountain to hike on and all that. But, I'm sorry. I'm off on a tangent at this point.
No, that's all right. I was just wondering
your question.
Yeah, my question was, like, whether there was a life event that precipitated this, or, like, you know, but understandable.
Yeah, so I think once I took the action that this is going to get real bad, we need to shift our focus from making money to producing food, because there's going to be food shortages, there is going to be social unrest, you know, there's going to be, you know, chaos in the streets. We need to plan our defensive strategies. Like, that's where my mind kind of went off the cliff. And all of a sudden I went from riding my bike, you know, 50 to 80 miles a day to not riding my bike at all for 2 months, gaining 20 pounds, drinking and putting other poisons in my body constantly. And my health going downhill. And, you know, when your physical health starts going downhill along with your mental health, you start feeling helpless and hopeless. And, you know, of course, that eventually starts wearing on my relationship with my wife. And I stopped being, you know, the loving husband and father that I know I truly am, and forget about being an outstanding leader to my team and, you know, trying to lead my clients and my business to be a ray of light and a source of hope when I felt hopeless myself. Yeah. And so I think it was probably just getting addicted to the bad news and believing that there was this black cloud coming, and that I don't know that I was helpless against it, but I was going to prioritize preparing for the worst rather than making my reality better.
Mm. Well,
I was really focused on all the events coming outside of me instead of focusing on what's inside of me, which got a whole lot inside of me when I pull it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there is plenty of bad news out there for sure. And if it's so easy to get sucked into it and caught up in that. And as you said, your mental health and your physical health are so linked, and it's sort of a vicious cycle that you can, I think anybody can get caught up in. You know, where are you in this process of working through this?
It's a great question. I kind of feel like I'm turning a corner. Just in the past couple of days, I talked to my good buddy, Monty Mertz, who, if you don't know Monty, he's out in Denver. He runs an awesome, awesome firm called High Country Search Group, and you should have Monty on your show. I'm happy to introduce
you
to him. But
thank you.
I was talking about some of these things, and he asked if I want to be part of their touchdown club. And I'm like, what's a touchdown club? He's like, you get a point every day for working out. It has to be a real workout, not like walking the dog around the street. And you get a point every day if you don't drink, don't smoke. And so the goal is to get 7 points a week. And obviously, if you work out every day or work out twice a day and don't drink, don't smoke, you can get, you know, two or three touchdowns a week. So, starting yesterday, after I talked to him, I got out on my bike, didn't drink anything yesterday, woke up at 5 a.m. this morning, got on my trainer bike inside, did a 30 minute spin, and I'm like, dude, I got 3 points on the board. And it's like, just that, I'm already feeling more empowered because I'm making different choices. I'm making better choices for me. And, you know, getting healthier, fitter, stronger every day, being a more loving husband and father, being a more outstanding leader in my business, being sober and actually loving it. Instead of waiting till the clock strikes at the end of the day so I could start, you know, have my first beer, I'm waiting for the clock to strike at the end of the day so I could get out on my bike before it gets dark out. Or even if it gets dark out, bring a light.
That's awesome, man.
It's cold out. Just bundle up. I got clothes. I got cold weather clothes. So, you know, even just the past couple of days, I feel like I've been coming out of it. And I woke up this morning and decided I'm going back on the news cleanse. And it's yes. freaking hard because it's like I try to give myself these leniencies like, oh, well, I could read cycling news and I could read ESPN.com. But you go on ESPN.com, right. It's like this coach is positive with the virus and this team, you know, got their game canceled because of the virus. And it's just even on sports, it's like bad news. So I may even have to take my sports news out of the rotation. But, you know, just waking up and, you know, while I was on my trainer bike, I listened to an audiobook, you know, for 30 minutes instead of, you know, reading news, you know, or feeding my mind positive, growth-oriented information instead of, you know, negative crap that just makes me think, see, you know, it just reinforces your belief system that the world is going to shit and there's nothing I could do about it. So what's the fucking point?
Absolutely. No, you're totally right. And it's those little, it can be such a small thing, but they stack up. And so in the same way as it is scarily easy to slip down a negative spiral, it is also possible to climb out and create a virtuous cycle where these little tiny habits, these little tiny shifts, you know, whether it's a news cleanse or not drinking or going out on your bike or connecting, reconnecting with friends or whatever those little steps are, they accumulate and, you know, create a more positive momentum. So I'm really happy to hear that.
Absolutely. There's a book called Atomic Habits by a guy named James Clear. Unbelievable book. In fact, I was reading that book January and February when I was probably at the healthiest I've been, at least in my adult life, if not my entire life, when I didn't drink or smoke anything for the first probably 3 months of the year. And I was reading that book during lunch every day. And, you know, those little habits, just like you don't realize in the moment that the negative habit, you know, the negative stacking effect, it's a compounding effect. They compound. Yeah. Consistency is compounding. It's right. like... you know, flossing your teeth every day compounds, not flossing your teeth every day compounds, you know, listening to audiobooks and feeding your mind good news every day compounds massively, and reading bad news and not standing guard at the gates of your mind definitely has a negative compounding effect when you do it constantly. And it's not like I would read bad news just when I would wake up. I would read bad news after hanging up every phone call. Oh, well, let me see if anything else bad happened in the world. It's like, see, bad shit is happening. That justifies my fears. You know, it's right. it's just so disempowering. So, day one back on the news cleanse and I'm feeling good about it.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I love that book. I've read it 2 or 3 times. I know it's changed my life in a positive way, probably more than any other sort of personal development book I've read. The Atomic Habits book is definitely one that I recommend to everybody. So listen, for people listening, I mean, there are steps you can take, and you obviously it's empowering to take ownership, but also I feel like I have a responsibility to also say that it's okay to get help as well, whether that's professional help or reaching out to friends and family. My dad's a psychiatrist. I'm obviously not qualified in any way, but I do have an awareness of mental health issues. And I've certainly had close friends and family members affected by depression. So I don't have the answers, but I definitely have a huge amount of empathy, and I would encourage people to seek help and not just try and figure it out all on their own. Cause sometimes if you're too deep in it, then you're almost not even you in order to take action and do the things that you're suggesting, you need to have that flash of inspiration or that little bit of positivity to get you started right on that path. And some people, if you go too far down that into that hole, then it can seem impossible to like even summon the motivation to take those first steps. So
on that note, I actually had a conversation with a therapist yesterday, and I'm probably going to go start seeing him. And good, you know, it's good that you mentioned that, because the voice inside of your head, that's what got you where you are, and you are not your thoughts, but that motor is just mouthing. The human mind that's been around for millions of years. It's not your mind, it's the mind. And there's this constant internal dialogue. And if it's a negative dialogue, you're going to talk yourself right off a cliff. Actually, the audiobook that I started listening to this morning is called The Untethered Soul by a guy named Michael Singer. I heard him on a podcast that Tony Robbins did, and it talked about happiness. And always, you know, we usually look externally, you know, for when I get this promotion, or when I find my soulmate, or when I go on this vacation, then I can be happy, versus looking internally to find happiness, and internally about why am I unhappy? Why am I stressed? Who is it in there? You know, and it's just been eye-opening just for the first 45 minutes I listened to it this morning. You know, and what's cool is I think, oh, I've got this stack of books that I've never really been into audiobooks, and Jessica keeps buying me books. I'm like, stop buying me books. I got this giant, it's like stressful seeing the stack of books on my night table that I don't even read, but I could, you know, ride my bike for 30 minutes in the morning and listen to 30 minutes, and the whole audiobook is only 6 hours. So after a week or two, that book will be done, and I'm feeding, you know, starting my day off right. And, you know, just those little actions, those habits are what's going to stack and get me back up to the top of the wave.
Yes. So. Wow, that's powerful. Thank you so much for opening up on this, Jordan. I think if there's anything positive coming out of this pandemic, I hope it's that people are more understanding and have more empathy for one another. And I think because everyone's working from home and meeting via Zoom or Microsoft Teams or whatever, the dividing walls like between people's personal and their professional lives are sort of coming down. And the relaxation of those boundaries means we're seeing a whole nother side of each other. And I hope that with that sort of vulnerability, there can also be greater acceptance of each other.
Yeah. I think there's been a lot of silver linings with this pandemic, if you go and look for them. Mm. And I feel like it was a Tim Ferriss podcast. I got really into listening to Tim Ferriss, who wrote the 4-Hour Workweek, which for a period of my life was like the Bible. When I started on the RV trip 14 years ago, it was probably shortly after that book came out. And I'm like, this is it. So I'm a big fan of Tim Ferriss, but he had one of his guests on there that they talked about, are you going to make this a live time or dead time? You know, when you're locked down and you're stuck in your house and you're getting paid not to work. Us recruiters, we never got paid not to work. But for everyone else that got paid to stay at home and not work, are you going to make it a live time or dead time? And it's just, how have you grown? If you chose to grow during this pandemic, like my younger sister, Morgan, I just visited her in South Florida. She has no less than literally 75 different varieties of fruits and vegetables planted in red solo cups around her backyard. I'm like, I took a video tour while she was describing these plants. And she's like, this is a soursop, and this is a dragon fruit, and this one over here. It's like these red solo cups. They aren't even marked. I'm like, this girl has become like an expert master gardener in her backyard growing out of solo cups because she's locked down there in the pandemic. And it's like some people, like I was for a period of time, just sobbed. And I guess in a way, I learned about raising chickens and growing fruits and vegetables on this side. So not too dissimilar from my sister, probably because my dad was a Y2K planner, and he's been telling us for decades that the world was going to crash. And so it's kind of in our gene pool to prepare for the worst. But anyways, I digress. I keep forgetting your questions. I keep going off on these strange tangents.
That's all right. I like a good tangent. And hey, being self-sufficient is not a bad thing, right? And I think eating stuff that you grow yourself or at least that is grown locally is good for the planet. Oh, yeah. It's good for your health. So I'm in favor of that. So listen, you mentioned Tim Ferriss. Can you tell them the story of like starting your business, and in particular, what inspired you to get an RV and run your business from the road?
Yeah, great questions. That's a fun story. So I was always big into Tony Robbins. I started going to Tony Robbins seminars when I was 22. And I went to this Leadership Academy seminar in 2006. And I came home and had this kind of mea culpa at our office's morning meeting back when I was with MRI, and told everyone, I'm sorry, I haven't been the leader that I should be, and I want to be a better leader. And within like a couple of weeks, I came to the realization, this is not the team that I was meant to lead. I was in like a 15-person office. We were doing about 2 million in revenue. I was a little over a million of the 2 million in revenue. So clearly it was skewed. And I just said, this isn't the team I was meant to lead. So I started looking outside at other options. And, you know, it was actually a conversation with my buddy, AJ. I'll give AJ credit, because I had a Porsche Cayenne at the time, and my lease was ending. So I was test driving BMW M3s and an Infiniti like Q45 or something. Not that the cars matter, but I was driving home from test driving one of these cars for like the second or third time, like, cause I was in a conundrum, and I'm bitching to AJ, like, AJ, this is a really tough decision. I can't decide. He's like, why are you going to go waste money on a fucking car? Why don't you go open your own goddamn business? And I hope you don't mind the language, but like, I gotta keep it real for the story point. I'm like, well, you know, I've got a wedding coming up next year, and you know, it's going to cost like 30 or 40 grand. He's like, when was the last time you didn't make 30 or 40 grand in a month? And I'm like, it was about 3.5 years ago that I didn't build 30 or 40 grand in a month. Like, I hadn't blanked for like years at that point. And he's like, so why don't you open your own fucking business? And I'm like, well, you know, I've already qualified for Pacesetter, and like we're going to Hawaii next year. And it's like, I just had my lineup of excuses, and he just kept breaking them down. He's like, why don't you open your own fucking business? I'm like, well, what if I fail? You know, I do a million a year. I make 350, 400. I have a, you know, 5 minute commute. Like, my life is really good. What if I fail? What if I lose it all? He's like, dude, is there any fucking chance you're going to fail in recruiting? And without hesitation, there wasn't like a thought. It was just, no, absolutely not. I'm never going to fail at recruiting. He's like, so why don't you open your own fucking business? I'm like, huh. You know, and I'm driving at night, but I had like one of these wire crossing moments in my brain. And I'm like, guess I need to open my own fucking business. I'm out of excuses. And, you know, I was in conversations at the time with another franchise network competitor to MRI. And, you know, as soon as I hung up with AJ, I got home that night. I talked to Jessica, and I called the guy from that other franchise network. And I'm like, hey, I think I want to take a trip up there and see you. And I flew up there later that week. And, you know, we started talking about my 200-mile non-compete agreement. And he's like, well, you could sell your house. You could, you know, go rent an apartment. You can do a bunch of things that I wasn't really that excited about. And Jessica's dad, who's no longer with us, but at the time he still was, and he had an RV and he had been traveling for a long time. And, you know, I think the idea came up like, hey, why don't you go borrow Bruce's RV? And I'm like, could that really work? Could we do this from an RV? Like, this was 2006. Like, they had just come out with Verizon wireless cards recently. I'm like, could that really work? And I had another one of these wire crossing moments. I'm like, that pretty much sounds like the best idea I've ever heard. I didn't want to borrow Bruce's RV because it was an old RV, but I literally stayed up the entire night researching RVs. And the next weekend I bought my RV, and I had to wait 2 months until my big commission check that I had coming in. I had to wait for that because I was going to finance our adventure before I could resign and actually start the adventure. But that was around July 4th weekend that we made the decision, and I just took some massive action. And August 29th, I resigned. And we spent about 5 months just driving around full time in the RV. And then January of 2007, we opened up shop, and away we go. That's what we've been
amazing.
Doing.
Amazing. That's the most creative way of overcoming a restrictive covenant that I've ever heard of.
That was it. It was literally the 200 mile, how to get around the 200 mile on compete agreement that spawned the RV idea. And we just had so much fun. It was supposed to be a 1 year workaround for the non-compete. We sold our house in Florida and drove around full time for the next 4 years. And eventually, wow. You know, you accumulate stuff when you're on the road. We had too much stuff to fit into the RV. So I ended up buying this house in Oregon in 2010 just to be able to park some of our stuff. But I'm still happiest when I'm out in the RV living the dream. It's
amazing. And I imagine, you know, once you have kids as well, that must be more difficult to go out on the road for long.
It's a new challenge. So people told me for years, they're like, you better enjoy that RV trip now, because when you have kids, you don't have kids, do you? I'm like, no kids yet. They're like, well, you better enjoy it, because once you have kids, that shit is over. Your life is going to change. Your life no longer belongs to you. Blah, 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 all those stories. And so right. I've been planning for years. Like, it was 2006 when we started. It was 2016 when we had our first kid. 2019 when we had another. And you are right. I mean, I have this beautiful desk set up in the RV, but it's pretty damn near impossible to make a lot of phone calls with two little kids screaming in the background. Not to mention we've raised three dogs along the way in the RV as well. But we could bribe dogs into silence with food, or you could bribe dogs into silence. I've yet to figure out how to bribe a one-year-old consistently into silence. So, awesome. So recently, last year, actually, we got a big 27-foot enclosed car trailer that had our motorcycle and a Toyota 4Runner and all our bicycles and stuff. So now we got a bigger trailer. We got a 33-foot trailer. It's got a separate 50-amp power panel. It's got an AC unit. We got a fold-down desk installed that works like a Murphy bed. Like, once you got the vehicles out, the desk just folds down, and I got electricity and AC, and I just get out of the RV and I go into the car trailer, and it's kind of fun because I'm a cycling fanatic, and I got all my bicycles just like spread out around the trailer. It's just me and my bike garage pounding phone calls. And so we're just fully operational with two kids and three dogs. They're in the RV, I'm in the trailer, and I got a rooftop deck on the trailer also, so I could go work up on the roof if it's sunny out, and we're just still living the dream.
Amazing. Rather than give in and say, okay, I guess, that part of her life's over and we're going to go back to being more conventional now, you found a workaround that allowed you to continue working, even though you've got maybe have chaos in the RV around you. You just take yourself off to the trailer.
Yeah. No, wow. There was no stopping it. And like this year, we came home to Oregon in March, and we were here from March to August and literally didn't leave. Obviously was so concerned with all the cloud of bad shit. At least if you read all the news, it probably was pretty bad in a lot of places. We were kind of insulated from it here in our little bubble. But in August, we got back out in the RV and started traveling, and, went to, actually it was when the fire, there were really bad fires here in Oregon. There was a massive fire about 10 miles from our house. So the smoke was so bad, it was like toxic. So we packed up. I'm like, I'm paying for this RV, whether it's in my driveway or whether I'm living in it. So we went to Colorado and Utah for a couple of weeks, and that was awesome. We came home for a little bit, and then we went down to Arizona for a couple of weeks, and went to Sedona, and worked out of a buddy's office in Scottsdale. A couple of my other Pinnacle friends that are in an office together, and so they wear masks, and it was a little different type of life, but it was great being in an office and seeing a bunch of my friends. And I'm a firm believer in the power of the peer group. And Pinnacle Society is probably the best peer group that I've found in our industry, at least from a personal production standpoint. And there's four or five Pinnacle friends of mine that are all kind of centered around Scottsdale. So it was good to go see them and remind me of the quality of life that I want to live. And it's kind of easy when you're all by yourself to lower your standards and allow yourself to say, hey, I'm comfortable. I have everything I need. Why do I need to be greedy? Why do I need more? I'm good right where I'm at. It's really easy to settle into that comfort zone, but then I go to Scottsdale, and my buddy Joe Rice, who's in Pinnacle, he's a hospitality recruiter, and he's been billing anywhere from 1.4 to 1.8 million a year, placing general managers at Ritz-Carlton's and hotels. So imagine what happened to his market. It literally died, went to zero. And he's been doing this for 10 years in hospitality. And instead of shriveling up like I did and focusing on growing food and raising chickens, he totally pivoted to senior living and got back on the phones in senior living in August, placing like executive directors of senior living homes. And he had $150,000 a month last month.
Wow.
In his third month in a brand new market. And it's like amazing. Just being in the office with him and watching him pound MPC calls, not even really knowing the lingo of senior living, but just taking the actions every day, pounding MPC calls. Like, I feel like that also helped me turn the corner. And, so power the peer group. If you're struggling, surround yourself with other badasses who are living a higher quality of life. You want to get stronger, work out in the gym with someone stronger than you. Right. When I was getting faster and fitter on my bike, it's because I was going on group rides with people who were stronger and faster and fitter than me. And, you know, you run with a higher level peer group, it's going to force you to grow in that area of your life. So, you know, from that standpoint, I've actually been less focused on isolation and more focused on reconnecting with friends and colleagues that are badasses. Not, you know, I got to be careful because, like, I love my family dearly, but, like, if I talk to my dad, it's worse than reading bad news. It's his interpretation and analysis of the bad news and what actions we need to take to prepare to counteract the bad news. So you got to be careful. You got to sometimes love your family, but choose your peers and choose who you actually surround yourself with.
Yes, absolutely. You know, and having
more positive people in your life.
Absolutely. You mentioned a couple of things. Joe Rice, by the way, is coming on the show. He's already confirmed. We're just trying to lock in a time that works for him. Probably going to record sometime around Thanksgiving. And you mentioned a couple of things I want to pick up on. One was just for the sake of clarity, MPC stands for Most Placeable Candidate. So, you know, in case people aren't familiar with that terminology, I'm pretty sure that's an MRI term.
Yeah,
but it's yeah, candidate marketing. So also, and I'm a big believer in that as well. You mentioned the power of the peer group, and, you know, Pinnacle Society sounds like an awesome group. I've got a coaching group called Inner Circle, which is also a sort of peer advisory network. And it's really powerful how people, number one, like when you work for yourself, it's especially designed for solo independent recruiters or very small teams, and you can kind of be in your own bubble. And as you know, as you say, either lower your standards or kind of just, you know, overanalyze stuff. And it really helps to break out of that and have other people to talk to of similar goals, similar challenges, and also create a bit of friendly competition. Like, you know, if you see someone else have a personal best or personal record, or they win a new retained search or something, it can spur you on as well. And, you know, wanting to keep up with that group.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, it's kind of, again, the motor going on in your mind constantly. It's not always saying good things, and it's kind of hard to elevate yourself to the next level with the level of thinking that got you into your current situation. So, absolutely helpful, whether it's having a coach or just having a peer group of people that are playing life at a high level in the area of life that that you aspire to achieve more.
Yes.
Critical. You know, I'm a big believer in the power of the peer group, and, you know, isolation has not been good for me. I think that's probably a big component of what got me into such a negative place this year, was being isolated and not going to Pinnacle meetings twice a year and seeing all my friends that are living this amazing quality. It's not just that they're successful and wealthy and they have things. It's that they have such beautiful hearts and they're so loving and giving, and they're so sharing of everything that they know and everything that they have. And, you know, I think that's something I was missing. So it was really valuable for me to go down to Arizona and, spend some time with these guys. And actually, I mean, I know, at least from the news I had read a couple of days ago, I guess the pandemic is getting worse and worse again. So I'm having second thoughts on this. But, you know, after going to Arizona last month and just having such a positive experience, we're like, hey, we got Pinnacle buddies all over the country. Jeremy being one of them, who works in an office in Houston. You know, Kathy Stewart and Dan Martineau have an office in Greensboro, North Carolina. We've got a bunch of friends with offices in Ohio, you know, throughout Ohio. You know, I've kind of got a connect the dots kind of loop in mind that, you know, we'll see how things go with the way of the world. But I think we're going to get back out in the RV and just do kind of like a Pinnacle roadshow and go spend two or three weeks at a time in different friends' offices and collect best practices and maybe do a little podcast, you know, kind of like what you're doing with.
Amazing.
You know, memorializing it to share everything that I'm learning with everyone else and just kind of raise the level of our industry. And so that's kind of our plan for next year.
Cool. Definitely do that. I would tune in for that. That sounds brilliant. So listen, look, coming back to your RV and the logistics of that, you mentioned, or I'm not sure if you mentioned it or I read about you having virtual teams. Can you describe how that works, what the structure is, and how you manage people remotely? And
Sure. Yeah. So, since late in 2007, we've had a virtual team, and
early. A lot of people do it now, but you were sort of ahead of the curve there.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I've had a lot of learning experiences over the years. One is make your morning meeting in a time zone, you know, based on what time zone you're in, make your morning meeting something you can consistently commit to and attain. You know, I made the mistake of thinking, oh, my team's all on the East Coast, so I need the morning meeting to be 8 a.m. because it used to be 7:30 when I was growing up in Fort Lauderdale. And so we need to do it at 8 a.m., but I was on the West Coast, and it was like I'd miss the morning meeting 3 out of 5 days a week, trying to think I could consistently make a 5 a.m. morning meeting. So that was a learning experience. So now we do it at 7 a.m. Pacific. It's 10 a.m. Eastern. But, so working the time zones is one thing. You know, also working the time zones in terms of where you take work, where your clients need to hire, what geographic niche you focus on. When you do your morning meetings, when you do afternoon wrap-ups, when you do training meetings, you know, making sure the time zones work for everyone involved. We do our morning meeting and training meetings via Zoom just to try to have some kind of face-to-face interaction. We do our afternoon wrap-ups just via phone. We also talk, you know, make three-way calls with clients and candidates throughout the day as needed.
Important. Can you say why you do that?
Yeah. Well, so we've got a team structure where I'm the main rainmaker, and I've got a project manager who typically is recruiting candidates for my searches. And we've got an admin researcher, Christina, who, you know, does not just administration, but she's actually out on LinkedIn sourcing candidates. So anything relating to planning, building lists, sourcing candidates, adding people to our database, that's a Christina job. You know, Wes, who's my project manager, he just calls candidates. He's out there recruiting, and I'm out there bringing in the work and doing air traffic control and managing process. So Oftentimes, when we're talking to clients about candidates, I've never even spoken with a candidate. The client doesn't know that, but when they're like, hey, why did they have this short stint? You know, Wes will just jump in and answer the question about their reason for making a move. Hey, if they're doing so well, why are they interested in this? And like without hesitation, Wes just jumps in and answers the question. So, and by the way, we've got Slack open in the background. So I think Slack is a great tool. We're on three-way calls, Wes and I might be communicating in the back channel via Slack. You know, if he's in the middle of saying something, I might Slack him a message like, hey, I'm going to jump in real quick, or hey, pass me the baton. And he might say, Jordan, do you have anything to add? And it's like just very natural that we'll kind of pass the baton back and forth so that we're not talking over each other.
Awesome.
So, typically I first talk to a candidate towards the end of the process, either prepping for a final interview or pre-closing on an offer, you know, on money and timing and things like that. And so, Wes has mainly had the relationship with the candidate throughout the process, and he kind of introduces me as his partner and CEO right at the end game. And it's like the candidate has kind of a little bit different level of respect for me, and I'm going to come in and ask the exact same questions that Wes probably asked 2 or 3 weeks earlier, like, hey, why are you looking to make a change? And where are you really at compensation wise? And what would you need to see in order to feel comfortable making a move? And I know some of these questions, maybe you can't ask in different geographies that have different laws, but, you know, generally speaking, and I'm testing, A, I'm looking for red flags, B, I'm seeing if the candidate is being truthful to me, because we have notes on the candidate saying I was at a 125 base, 250 at plan. They don't have notes in their mind of what they told Wes 3 weeks ago. And when they tell us 140 base, 280 at plan, you know, that tells me, all right, well, TAL, they all lie. Unfortunately, it keeps being proven true. Maybe it's just because I play salespeople. And, maybe with salespeople being fudging the truth a little bit is more prevalent. But I find it's really useful later in the process for me to come in and kind of gut check what a candidate's been telling, you know, Wes throughout the process. And also, so we're looking for different answers, but it's just the divide and conquer, you know, allows me to focus on higher dollar value activities. Just like if you're a million, let's say you work 40 hours a week, 50 weeks a year, you work in 2000 hours a year. If you want to bill $1 million a year, your time needs to be worth $500 an hour. Meaning if it's not a $500 hour activity, you shouldn't be doing it. You should be outsourcing it and delegating it. Now, I love Christina dearly, but is sending interview confirmations and meeting invites, it's not a $500 hour activity, so we put it on her plate. Is going on LinkedIn and adding candidates to your database, that's not even a $500 hour activity. In fact, I would even say calling candidates to recruit them is not a $500 an hour activity. Doing biz development, getting searches, getting client commitment, closing deals, overcoming concerns, things of that nature, those are the high dollar value activities. That's what I focus on, and we outsource and delegate the rest.
Amazing. Thank you for describing that in such detail. I think what you've underlined is the importance of, if you have a virtual team, communicate, communicate, communicate. You've got twice daily calls, you've got training calls, you've got Slack, you're doing three-way conversations with clients, with candidates. So it's no wonder that you've made that work. Presumably it's through making mistakes along the way and not always getting it right. But
a lot of learning experiences over the years.
What would you say was the, can you highlight one or two of those, like things that you now do because you learned the hard way that it could backfire?
Yeah. I mean, so, I don't like being a policeman. I like, traveling in an RV and living the dream. And for me to monitor if someone else is working or not, that's just a waste of my time. And it doesn't bring me happiness and joy and fulfillment. So the type of person who's going to make fake phone calls and like call the movie phone line because it's going to loop again and again in order to get 15 minutes added to their phone time. If someone's going to do that in an office, they're just not going to make any phone calls when they're working from home. So making sure that you have the right people that are self-motivated and proactive, is definitely one thing. I've gotten to the point, after 20 years of doing this, that I don't want to be a policeman, and I'm just not going to spend my entire day inspecting what everyone else is doing. Now, another term that I got from Nick Turner, people respect what you inspect, not what you expect. So to a certain extent, I am a big fan of the metrics and tracking your job orders and first time interviews and candidate submittals. And if the results aren't there, then you need to back it up and look at the effort metrics, which are how many call attempts are you making? How many live conversations are you having? Things of that nature. And there's a way for people to fudge all that too. So, at the end of the day, if it's just a hash sheet, or it's clicking a button in PCR next to someone's name on a roll-up list, and that's how you count your call attempts, someone could just go click, 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 click. If they want to fake their effort, it's kind of hard to fake the activity though, since Christine is the one sending all the interview confirmations. So at the end of the day, the revenue results are a result of activity metrics, and the activity metrics are a result of the effort metrics. And, someone can't self-manage themselves to put up the right amount of shots and put in the right amount of effort, then they're just not going to be successful. And the problem typically works itself out naturally.
I agree 100%. And I think, I've got a virtual assistant, Rachel. I've got a few people on my team, all work remotely. But Rachel was my first hire in this model a couple of years ago. And she's based in the Philippines. And I was a little nervous about doing that. And so I had this software that would monitor what people were doing on their computer and all that. And after 2 weeks, but the reality is I never checked it because I was like, I don't want to spend my time looking at what she's doing on her computer. And I thought, well, do I trust her? Well, yes, because if I don't trust her, we shouldn't be working together, right? And so I said, Rachel, just switch that thing off. We're not going to use that anymore. And she's been with me 2 years. She's a huge asset.
By the way, that goes right back into what I was saying about outsourcing and delegating. Whether you're $1 million biller, even if you're a $300,000 biller and you're solo, your time needs to be worth $150 an hour. So if you could pay a virtual assistant in the Philippines or India or wherever, $8 an hour, $10 an hour, if you could pay a virtual research team, $8 or $10 an hour to build you a list of candidates or client leads while you're sleeping, clearly your time is worth more than that. So outsource and delegate that. Get a virtual assistant, outsource your research. If your time is worth more, then it would cost you to, if you got a big yard, pay someone to cut your yard. If you get personal joy and fulfillment out of cutting your own yard, cut your own yard. But, you outsource and delegate things like that. You should outsource and delegate things in your recruiting business.
Absolutely. You're totally right. Something I want to ask you about, Jordan, because this is one of the issues that comes up again and again, even for really like tenured veteran recruiters, is planning. And I think this is something, power planning is something that you have presented on in the past. And it's, I find that a lot of people are resistant to it. Like everyone knows that it's powerful and that they should do it, but there's this resistance. Could you say a little bit about how, what your process is and how you get yourself to do it?
Yeah. So with planning, I mean, rule number one is plan during planning time. So if you don't have planning time on your schedule, you're going to violate rule number one and you're going to plan all day long. You're going to plan in between calls. You're going to be trying to figure out when you hang up one call, who am I going to call next? What am I going to say to them? You're going to spend 3 to 5 minutes between calls. And let's say you make 60 calls a day, 3 minutes between calls, that's 180 minutes. That's 3 hours of your day. Poof. Just from figuring out who you're going to call and you know, that 3 minutes between calls. Whereas if you spend 1 hour a day planning so that you've got a really kick-ass plan, you know, everyone you're going to call, you've got everyone on a call list. In fact, you've probably got twice as many calls on your list as you could possibly make in a day. Said you're never going to run out of calls and 2:30 in the afternoon after getting voicemails all day. Oh, I'm out of calls. Who am I going to call next? That's a planning issue. But knowing everyone you're going to call and who you're going to call next, let's just say you cut your time between calls down to 1 minute. Instead of 3 minutes, you just gave yourself an extra 2 hours of phone time. You know, right. If you average 2 hours of phone time a day, now you're averaging 4 hours of phone time a day. You just went from billing 200 to 400. Poof. Just like that. Just from planning. Planning will make the single biggest difference in your production immediately. Like, oh, we're going to do this new SEO strategy. We're going to do omnipresence on, you know, social media and all these things that you hope to start seeing results over time. You have a kick-ass plan today. You're going to increase your phone time tomorrow. You're going to talk to more people. You're going to get more activity. Like, you see the results instantly from getting better at planning. So rule number one, plan during planning time, which means you got to plan a time on your schedule. That could be 7 a.m., could be 4:30 in the afternoon, could be 8 o'clock at night, whatever works for your lifestyle and your schedule, your family life, fit it in. You know, sometimes when, you know, if it's for, you know, I start my day at 5 in the morning, I have a morning meeting early. You know, I'm kind of done working by 4 p.m. Pacific time, and I've got a 9 or 10 hour day in. I like to go ride my bike while it's still daylight out, and I'll come home and I'll do my planning at 8 or 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night. You know, so it doesn't have to be during traditional business hours, but you need to have a time on your schedule every day to do your planning. You know, so my personal checklist is probably, you know, knowing everyone you're going to call and exactly what you're going to say to them. So I like to have a rule of thumb, have twice as many calls on your plan as you average. If you average 50 calls a day, have 100 on your plan. So if you have a voicemail day from hell, you don't, you know, and you make 80 calls and 77 of them are voicemails, you're not running out of calls because you're well planned. You got a script of knowing exactly what you're going to say to them. You got a script for your MPC that you're going to present if you're marketing a candidate out there. You might have a script for biz dev. You might have a script for recruiting. I like to have at least 2 recruiting projects planned. So, you know, let's say you open one up in the morning and you make 30 calls and you get three to five candidates qualified and interested. And it's like, man, this is awesome. Do you keep making calls on that the rest of the day? Or if you're well planned, you have a second project, close that first list down, open your next one up, pull up your script, boom, you're right into the next project. So I like to have 2 recruiting projects planned at a minimum, have an MPC planned, who you're going to take to market. I like to have, I do a couple different functions, sales and pre-sales engineers. So I always try to have a sales rep, a sales leader, a pre-sales engineer, and a pre-sales engineering leader. So no matter what level of decision maker I'm talking to, I have a candidate that's going to be relevant to them. And I've got a different script for each of those candidates. Mm-hmm. You know, other things to do during planning time is, you know, all of your industry research. You know, I think especially if you're a specialist, if you want to be a market master, you need to stay up to date on what's going on in your industry. So you need to do industry research, but you should not be reading about what's going on in your industry at 11 in the morning. You know, maybe unless that's not your prime time or unless you're on a little break, maybe you do, because it's probably healthier than reading bad news. Like I've done the past. But in general, you should do your industry research during planning time. And if you're planning at the end of the day, then, or maybe you do your industry research specifically first thing in the morning before you start your day. So you've got some value that you could add on your various conversations. But in general, I like to do my industry research during planning time. Anything related to social media, you know, I know for you know, it might be beneficial to post things on LinkedIn or somewhere else at certain times of the day, but you can actually create those posts during planning time and schedule them to go off at certain times of the day. So anything having to do with social media, anything having to do with sourcing, if you haven't outsourced or delegated your sourcing, i.e. going on LinkedIn, creating lists of candidates, importing them into your database, or creating a list in LinkedIn, however you choose to do it. If you have LinkedIn Recruiter, for example, doing that during planning time. You know, you shouldn't be going on LinkedIn and adding candidates to your database at 9:30 in the morning. That's prime time. You should be making phone calls. If you're adding candidates to your database during prime time, that's money just going out of your pocket. It's just exiting. Money is either going in your pocket every minute of the day or it's going out of your pocket every minute of the day. So be aware of your time and how you're spending it. You know, beyond anything with social media and LinkedIn, you know, I'm a huge fan of mass emails. I don't think there's a better way to cast a wide net and get some initial candidates to test your clients with quickly. But the problem is, at least if you send your own mass emails, you might send a mass email to 500 people and you get 30 responses. That's awesome. But these 30 responses are dinging into your inbox all day long. It's like ding, ding, ding. And everyone that comes in, you're like, ooh, dopamine hit. Let me see who this is. Oh, it's just someone telling me they're not interested. Okay, that's a distraction. That minute or two or three, you know, again, think of those stacking up throughout the day, costing you money, pulling money out of your pocket all day long. So at least if you have a folder in your email or your Outlook or wherever, call it email, mass email responses, at least as you go through your email, just move all the email responses to that folder and go through them all in a very focused manner at the end of the day during planning time. And then, you know, call them all in a very focused manner the first thing the next morning. And instead of calling all 30 as they come in, and maybe some of them are good and some of them aren't, you're going to prioritize the 10 that are the best fit. You're going to call those 10 first, and you might have 3 to 5 that are qualified and interested, and your search is basically done. And the other 20 that aren't a good fit, you could send a follow-up mass email saying, hey, sorry, our client has other candidates that are a closer fit to what they're looking for. We'll keep you in mind for opportunities in the future. And you never even have to waste time calling those people. So again, just doing everything. Power planning is just doing planning in a very focused manner, not switch tasking back and forth between making phone calls, checking emails, going on LinkedIn, reading an article. All of these switch tasks, every time you switch tasks, there's time cost. And, you know, yes, versus doing planning in a very focused manner, doing your email all at once, making your phone calls all at once, doing your LinkedIn sourcing all at once. And it's just doing it all in a very focused manner. So I think that's probably the, you know, I mean, there's other things that you could lump into planning, like, and you know, if you don't have your own administrative assistant, you know, putting together client fee agreements, sending out interview confirmations with meeting invites, you know, any of the, you know, putting together invoices, following up on accounts receivable, you know, everything like that. You could do all your administrative tasks, you know, lumped all together during planning time. So that's
amazing. That's kind of so I love everything you just said. The challenge I've got with is human nature being what it is. Is like, how do you get yourself to stick to it? Because people, even if you have a plan, you've planned your planning time and it's locked into your calendar as an appointment, if people don't like doing it, then they just, you know, they blow it off. What suggestion do you have for someone who finds, and they know that they should be doing it and they feel bad, they beat themselves up, but they just find that they're continuously winging it instead of being well-planned?
That's a good question. I've never really thought of it from that aspect. You know, going back to Atomic Habits, you know, somewhere in that book, it talks about when you see success, it reinforces the habit. So if you do it once and the next day you have the joy of just plowing through your plan. And if you monitor your phone time, even if you have an iPhone, you can reset your call timer on your iPhone every day. You know, and one day you get 2 hours and the next day after you're well planned, you get 3 hours or 3.5. It's like, whoa, I mean, it's common sense. If you're talking to more people, connecting with more people in your marketplace, you're going to make more stuff happen. You're going to get more activity. You're going to eventually bill more.
Right. So right. I like it.
I think if you start seeing that success, just reset your call timer one day and monitor your phone time and then do it, you know, focus on, force yourself to plan, take the medicine. You don't want to take medicine, but you want the results of more money in your bank account. So right. have one plan and then force yourself to execute on your plan and see the results. And that success will reinforce the habit. Or I think he also talked about in Atomic Habits, fit something in. Like if you've got a routine, let's say you've got your morning routine, you wake up, you brush your teeth, you weigh yourself on the scale, and then you do some, you know, you do something you like, you make your morning coffee, but then there's something you don't want to do, but you kind of squeeze it in the middle of your routine and it kind of forces you to do it because you need to do that in order to, before you're like, I tell Jessica, my wife, so she has an issue with like drinking water. Like she's chronic, in my opinion, she's chronically dehydrated. I'm like, you are not allowed to have coffee in the morning until you drink a full glass of water. So it's like forces her to drink a glass of water in order to get the thing that she wants, which is the coffee.
Right.
So, you know, I would say maybe try that. Hey, before I get out, I'm allowed to get out on my bike, you know, because what I really want is to go ride my bike. Do I really want to do planning? No. But I force it into the routine and it becomes a habit and you condition it as a habit. So those are two
absolutely
strategies.
Love it. That's brilliant. That's brilliant, Jordan. Well, listen, there's loads more we could talk about. Let's say to be continued, and I hope we get the chance to do this again someday. And thanks again for showing up and putting yourself out there and helping other people, even though you didn't really feel like it. I appreciate you, man.
And I've enjoyed this, Mark, and I look forward to doing it again.
Stay safe and have a great day. Thanks, Jordan.
Have a kick-ass day as well. Same time out there.
Take care now.